As I say, the thing I like the most is to become a real actress. And I remember when I was a kid, sitting in the front row at the movies on Saturday afternoon. And I would never come out of the movie. They'd have to come and get me. You know, I'd sit in the front row. And I'd think how wonderful it would be to be an actress and so forth. But I didn't really realize about acting. Except I appreciated what I saw. Bad, good, it didn't matter. I enjoyed it very much, everything that I would see.
NBC Radio presents a special report. Marilyn Monroe, fame is fickle. Our host for this special program, Leon Pearson, NBC News.
Marilyn Monroe is dead. We grasp at straws, as if knowing how she died or why might enable us to bring her back. Not since Jean Harlow of the standards of feminine charm been so embodied in the form of one woman. Whatever attracts man to woman, she possessed. The moralists have decried our modern emphasis on sex, but no one can ignore it. It is important. Marilyn Monroe was this era's sex symbol. And for this reason, if for no other, she was important. The circumstances of her death were sad. On Saturday night, the girl a million men would have loved to date was alone in her room, playing records on a phonograph. The only people she had seen on that last day of her life were her housekeeper, her psychiatrist, and her press agent, all persons who were paid to care for her in some way. So, ironically, the end of her life was like the beginning. She spent her early years cared for by people who were paid to do so in orphanages and foster homes. She began life as Norma Jean Baker, born out of wedlock, unwanted by a mother who has spent most of her life since then in mental institutions. She ended life as Marilyn Monroe, an internationally famous film star whose pictures earned over $200 million. But you can't help wondering if the little girl who sat in the front row of the movies as Norma Jean Baker was ever completely transformed into the glamorous Marilyn Monroe. In this hour, we'll talk to people who knew her, examine her fame, and try to find out why Marilyn Monroe said, "Fame is fickle." Fickle or not, fame was hers, and her death made news all over the world. Reaction to that news now from Bernard Frizzell in Paris.
It is rare that the death of a woman arouses the interest and the compassion that the death of Marilyn Monroe has aroused in France. All day yesterday, the tragic news was broadcast to the nation. Today, as groups gathered around newspaper kiosks in the streets of Paris, the headlines chanted Marilyn's death to the litany that neither success nor fame nor adulation ever brought her happiness. In the south of France on vacation, French actor and singer Yves Montand told one newspaper man that he was very happy and very proud to have worked with Marilyn. But with a note of Gallic realism, Montand added, "Marilyn was the most tormented woman on earth. The men around her looked at her the way owners of racehorses look at their best sprinters. Marilyn had to win all the grand prizes and by several lengths." Then Montand said, "I astonished her by talking to her the way we talk among theater comrades in France over a glass of beer and a bit of steak and fried potatoes. That's probably the reason they became such close friends." This is Bernard Frizzell, NBC News, Paris.
And now Ken Bernstein in Buenos Aires.
She was nothing at all like the average Latin woman. Maybe that's why she was such a captivating hit down here. She was one of the biggest stars ever to fill a movie house in Lima, Rio, or Buenos Aires. She didn't talk their language, but every man in the audience understood her. In Latin America, she was M.M., or La Bella Marilyn. When she died, radio stations interrupted their programs for the bulletin, and newspapers gave her the front page. Clarín, the biggest morning paper in Argentina, set aside three full pages. The headline, two English words known to every moviegoer in the world, the end. La Prensa, Argentina's most distinguished newspaper, gave her an unusually emotional obituary. Others will speak of this terrible modern life, of the sins of parents, of frivolity and madness, of a wasted and unbelieving situation, said La Prensa. All this seems to us very superficial and useless. Seems to us more important and more human to feel sad, and not with an impersonal and remote sadness, but with the sadness for those we understand and love. This was the sadness you felt at newsstands where people got the details and stopped to mourn her. waiters and diplomats and housewives who might have been jealous, gathered on street corners, shook their heads and said, "It's so very sad." In movie mad Buenos Aires, where 50 first-run theaters keep busy catering to the extraordinary demand, a distributor is making hurry-up arrangements to re-release her last picture, The Misfits, Los Inadaptados. A spokesman for the distributor said Argentines are very sentimental and will probably flock to the posthumous showing. Many a fan got a lump in the throat reading the obituary in La Razón, the biggest circulation newspaper in all Latin America. It wound up this way. Finally, we are going to say what she most would have liked us to say. In spite of everything, in addition to everything, she was a great actress. Kenneth Bernstein, NBC News, Buenos Aires.
Now a report from Irving R. Levine in Rome.
Rome likes to think of itself as replacing Hollywood as the center of movie making. And it is true that more films are made here now than in Hollywood. Thus, the death of Marilyn Monroe shocked a movie community here as large as any in Europe. The comments were all you would expect at the moment of tragedy. Rivals utter words of eulogy. Said Sophia Loren, the Italian actress who won the Academy Award this year, "Marilyn was a marvelous actress with a distinctive personality." A movie executive of my acquaintance spoke of other aspects of the death. He pointed out that not only was it a personal tragedy, but it was also a blow for the motion picture industry. That industry, he explained, received a bad name from the recent scandals associated with Elizabeth Taylor in Rome. The Marilyn Monroe tragedy adds to the unsavory atmosphere of movie making. Then the film executive added a theme which is heard in Europe from sources as diverse as the Vatican's Osservatore Romano and Moscow's Izvestia. He said that it was the life in Hollywood that caused Miss Monroe's death. The Vatican newspaper, which 2 months ago criticized Marilyn Monroe for her nude swimming scene, said today that she was the victim of a mentality and a way and conception of life of which she was a symbol. The communist government newspaper called Miss Monroe a victim of Hollywood. It gave birth to her, and it killed her. Europe movie makers are expressing sentiments of mourning for a colleague tonight, but clearly they feel some tinge of indefinable guilt by distant association. This is Irving R. Levine, NBC News, Rome.
And now to Cecil Brown in Tokyo.
In this country, everybody has black hair, so Japanese movie fans adored Marilyn Monroe for her blonde beauty. Of course, she was a sex symbol, too, but her appeal in the Orient was more endurable than a Bardot, for example, because she put humor and wit into her acting out her sexiness. The Japanese demand modesty in their own movie stars, but they expect glamour and a sort of unattainable quality about foreign stars. They expect them not to be like the girl next door, because a foreigner automatically is too different to be that. And to the Japanese, Marilyn Monroe was a fascinating beauty from another world, but she also met the yardstick of modesty. It's amazing how many people here remember the way Marilyn Monroe behaved when she came to Japan on her honeymoon with Joe DiMaggio in 1954. Then she attracted an unprecedented crowd of screaming fans at the airport. But she won the hearts of Japanese by trying to focus all the attention on her husband, whose big baseball days were over. The Japanese people admire their jet hair movie stars, but they adore blonde Marilyn Monroe, maybe because they could never have one of their own. This is Cecil Brown, NBC News, Tokyo.
And to Roy Neal in Hollywood.
In Hollywood, Marilyn Monroe was a star who became known throughout the world as a sex symbol. And then there was Marilyn Monroe, the image. The girl who once entertained troops in Korea with a song and dance routine. A woman among men who was publicized widely, including queen-sized billboards on Times Square in New York. Who went through the divorce courts 3 times. Arthur Miller was last, baseball's Joe DiMaggio and a police officer were the others. And of whom Sir Laurence Olivier tried to make a dramatic actress. And director George Cukor had this to say.
One of the things that was unique about her, she thought boldly. She thought, her thoughts were uncensored. And she had a communication with an audience. So therefore, whatever she imagined came over in enormous force. And she had the self-possession not to cover that up. So she was always a peculiar combination of fear and boldness.
She had a big house in Brentwood and was well on the way to being a millionairess when the housekeeper found Miss Monroe stretched out on her bed, telephone in hand, dead with a bottle of sleeping pills beside her. Her body is to be released to the conservator of her mother's estate. Los Angeles County Coroner Theodore Curfee summed it up.
From the information supplied to us from those investigating the case at the scene, it is our presumptive opinion at the moment that Miss Monroe died from an overdose of some drug. But the nature of the drug and the quantity must await examination by the chemical laboratory. We expect that we shall have a final report from them within the next 24 hours. Of course, the other side of it, the matter of establishing the mode of death in contrast to the cause of death, awaits the report from this team of psychiatrists that we've had associated with this office for the past 4 years, who routinely investigate these deaths where suicide might be a matter at issue.
Still unknown whether it was suicide or an accident. Marilyn Monroe's funeral will take place Wednesday morning. Roy Neal, NBC News, reporting.
Marilyn Monroe's death, news all over the world. Marilyn Monroe had become more and more reluctant to give interviews to the press, but recently she agreed to a series of conversations with Richard Merriman, an associate editor of Life magazine. It's a strange coincidence, fortunate timing, that the interview appears in the August 3rd issue of Life. She died the night of the 4th. Sunday evening on Monitor, Frank McGee talked with Mr. Merriman.
Well, tell me, how did you arrange the interview with her?
Well, you'd think it would have been quite hard, but it wasn't. Mainly because I had a very good subject, one that fascinated her. That is fame.
Uh-huh.
It was a story on fame, and it was. She agreed to do it on that basis. She was very insistent that it was not to be a conventional movie magazine story about Marilyn Monroe. She's a very serious minded person, actually, and has considerable intellectual pretensions, and was very intrigued by doing a serious, almost sociological story on what it's like to be as famous as Marilyn Monroe.
And what effect it has on your life, huh?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've read the article and I found it fascinating, but what effect did she find that it had on her life? What seemed to be her major conclusion about fame?
Well, the thing that she said most often, so often that we felt it was overdoing it to put it in the story, was she kept saying, fame is fickle.
Mm-hmm.
Then she'd laugh, and then she'd say, and I know that's true.
Mm-hmm.
And then she'd laugh again. She was always very gay and bright during most of it, except when she was angry.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's not an original observation, but I expect it does come home with impact. It makes it fresh for each person that's subjected to it.
Well, it sounds... When we edited the story, we took it out partly because it sounded like a cliche, but it's revealing about Marilyn and the way she said it. Everything she says, no matter what it is, sounds exciting.
Mm-hmm.
She puts a enthusiasm and a real flair and a feel that's uniquely hers. It's hypnotic and fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
And when she says that, you think it's a profound statement.
It doesn't sound just like an old, tired cliche.
No, not at all.
Well, how did you do the interview? Did you record it on tape and then transcribe it?
Yes.
All in her words.
Yes, this was part of it. Marilyn feels she's been badly used over the years by the press because they've quoted her irresponsibly, that what she has said has been taken out of context. People, she said, have written about her constantly without ever talking about her.
Mm-hmm.
She was constantly concerned about her stepchildren and the fact that they would read things about her in magazines.
She mentioned that in your article, didn't she?
Yes, and she worried about that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But she wanted this. She insisted on having complete control over the story, on clearing every word. But the thing that happened was that all the things she was famous for never happened. I was quite worried about giving her permission to clear every word because she's so famous for making trouble. She'd just been fired as a troublemaker, and I'd heard all kinds of lurid stories about her, and people predicted that I would go to Los Angeles and wait a week trying to see her.
Yeah.
She was on time for every interview.
Mm-hmm.
She made no trouble whatsoever in the clearing of it. And she did make changes, but they were all eminently reasonable and actually helped the story.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite interesting. When she cleared it, I gave her my final draft, and we sat side by side in a little tiny couch in a kind of patio, glassed-in patio.
This at her home?
That was at her home.
Mm-hmm.
And she read the entire piece aloud, word for word, with inflection, and anything that didn't sound like her or didn't seem quite right, we worked out a change.
A word or two.
And it was only a word or two. Then she took the piece with her, and she, for an hour she had to drive somewhere,
mm-hmm.
meet an appointment, and she worked on it with a pencil. And her changes were fine. They simply sharpened the piece, said what she wanted to say. And in New York, we had to make small changes and some cuts, and I had to clear those with her. And she always remembered exactly what she'd said, right down to the word.
Mm-hmm.
If I changed a but or an and or an if, she always knew it.
Well, I get the impression that this article had some importance for her.
I think she felt it was very important.
Uh-huh.
She gave a lot to it.
Uh-huh.
There were two interviews from 6 p.m. until 1 a.m. These are the hours that she performs best, I think.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
She's a night person.
Now, Dick, I know that she had been I can't think of the name of the movie. She'd been working on this movie, and it was a big, expensive, posh affair, probably, and she was fired because she was charged with always being late and not on hand and was costing a great deal of money. My question is, did this seem to have upset her terribly? I'm sure you talked about it.
Well, she was much more angry than anything else. That seemed to be her main emotion. I did not feel that she was deeply depressed or morose or brooding particularly. Mm-hmm. One of my interviews came just after she'd been at the talking to the people at Fox,
mm-hmm.
and she was in a rage.
Furious.
But seemed like a perfectly healthy
mm-hmm.
attitude toward it. From her point of view, perfectly natural.
And when you talked with her later, no despondency about this seemed to have set in.
No, I was never aware of it.
Uh-huh. Was there anything in her attitude as you talked with her to indicate that she might even conceivably be contemplating such a thing? Would you have thought she would do it?
I would not have thought she did it. I was totally taken aback. She, by and large, was in high good humor, very robust, zestful, gusto, all those words are what describe her.
Mm-hmm.
Terrific range of emotions. She's a dramatic talker, electric person. But now that that she may have taken her own life, I can look back and I can piece together things that all add up to it, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
It's just speculation. But I can see that there are forces in her that when everything came together in her life might have driven her to do it.
Fame will go by, and so long I've had you, fame. Words that seem to take on more meaning now than when they were spoken to Richard Merriman. You've heard Mr. Merriman as he was interviewed on Sunday Night Monitor by Frank McGee. Probably very few film fans remember a picture called A Ticket to Tomahawk. That was the beginning, 1950. In that year, she did three pictures. The other two were The Asphalt Jungle, a gangster film, and All About Eve, in which Betty Davis had the lead. The next 2 years were not distinguished for Marilyn Monroe, but in 1953 came Gentlemen Prefer Blondes and How to Marry a Millionaire. Now she was on the high trail. In the next years, fewer pictures, but better parts and greater success. 1954, There's No Business Like Show Business. 1955, The Seven-Year Itch. 1956, Bus Stop. 1957, The Prince and the Showgirl. Nothing in 1958. 1959, Some Like It Hot. 1960, Let's Make Love. And in 1961, The Misfits, which, by the way, was written by her husband, Mr. Miller, was not a success, and incidentally, divorce followed. All told, 23 pictures in 12 years, which grossed a grand total of $200 million. When a star can make that kind of money, she can make trouble, too. In the filming of Let's Make Love with Yves Montand, Marilyn sometimes would play hooky for an entire afternoon, leaving the French star biting his fingernails and saying, "Where is she? I cannot wait and wait. I'm not an automobile." The delays in the picture forced Montand to cancel an engagement in Tokyo, and for this he had to pay a penalty of $120,000. But the studio, 20th Century Fox, paid the bill. Jerry Wall, the producer, said of her, "She is not malicious, she is not temperamental. She's a star, a self-illuminating body, an original, a legend. You hire a legend and it's going to cost you dough." But that charitable judgment was not always present. She was fired recently during the filming of Something's Got to Give. That's the picture that Frank McGee was speaking about with Richard Merriman. And 20th Century Fox sued her for $500,000, charging that her tardiness and absence from the set caused a $2 million loss. It may well be that this turn of events, this public rebuke, brought her to the state of mind which ended in the events of last Saturday night. As a person, she was adored by millions, but she sought something more personal, as in the picture Some Like It Hot, when she sang, "I Want to Be Loved by You."
I want to be kissed by you, just you, nobody else but you. I want to be kissed by you alone. I couldn't aspire to anything higher than to feel the desire to make you my own. Pa-dum-pa-dum-pa-dum-pa-dum.
Become so successful. In the beginning, the man who was said to be responsible for her steady climb to fame was photographer Milton Green. He became president of Marilyn Monroe Productions, but the association did not last to the end. Milton Green is in Paris. Bernard Frizzell, NBC News, interviews him.
Mr. Green, could you tell us when and under what circumstances you met Marilyn Monroe?
I met Marilyn Monroe in California about 10 years ago while I was on a photographic assignment. For a national magazine.
What happened when you met her, Mr. Green?
Well, I was very, very impressed. She looked beautiful to me, and I did want to take pictures of her.
Did she say anything to you right off the bat?
Well, she looked up when we were introduced. She was looking at the pictures that were shown to her, and she said, "But he's only a boy." And I said, "But you're only a girl."
And that was the beginning, I suppose, of a great friendship.
Yeah.
How did she impress you from a photographic standpoint?
Well, I couldn't wait to photograph her. I mean, it was my privilege. I was looking forward to it.
Was she cooperative?
Extremely.
Was she a good subject to
photograph?
Yes, I think it'd be a privilege any photographer to photograph her.
How did she behave when you were photographing her?
Well, at the beginning, she was just a little bit nervous, but then after a while, she felt reassured and comfortable, and you couldn't ask for anything better.
What was your problem with her as a photographer?
I had no problem.
Wasn't there a problem of reassurance?
Oh, you mean, yes, well, that's just as a matter of the way people work together, I guess.
I see. As a human being, what was she like?
Well, she was very, very sensitive and very understanding, great feeling for human beings, people, and animals. I know once I was with her and she saw a dog get hit and was dead, and she broke out in tears.
Hit by a car.
Hit by a car. Mm-hmm.
And when you say that she was sensitive, can you think of any anecdotes to indicate that?
Well, it's just the tone of the voice could make her feel upset or make her feel rejected even, you know? And she was extremely sensitive.
You mean criticism through her?
Criticism or even herself at times. She'd criticize herself. She was probably her worst critic or her best critic.
Did you find her intelligent?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Did she have a peculiar kind of intelligence?
Well, she has sort of an inner sense, like a keen sense, which goes right to the root of it, and which is surprising at times.
Was it a logical intelligence?
Yes.
Or was it more...
For her work, her whole life was an actress. She belonged to the cinema.
Well, you're talking about her quality of talent, aren't you?
Yes, but her whole... it's her talent, her life, every day was always... She was always working on her work within herself. It wasn't just on a surface or when she went to school. When she went to school to learn, it was to get certain lessons, and then she'd be working at it all the time. She never stopped.
So she was a 24-hour-a-day worker.
All the time.
Marilyn was a great sex symbol for our time. Was this something that she merely projected on a piece of film, or is this the way she was personally?
No, I think this is what Hollywood has classified her as to capitalize on. And this is the way they see it. I never saw her as a great sex symbol. I saw her as a marvelous person and a great actress.
And when you saw her personally, she did not project this quality that she projected on the screen?
No, that was Marilyn. That was her natural qualities. And that's why I think when she was on the screen, people couldn't believe it. If you saw her doing a take of a movie, when they're making a movie, and then went to the rushes, they were surprised to see what they saw on the screen when they saw the take going on. They couldn't believe it.
And why is that?
She has a certain quality. I don't know what the word would be, whether it's chemical or what, but she had this quality which projected on the screen, and people didn't see it while they were doing it.
Miraculous.
It is, yes. Extraordinary.
And as a human being, how did she impress you then, since she wasn't this sex symbol that she projected on the screen? Was she the nice girl next door?
I don't know what the nice girl next door is. I accepted Marilyn as Marilyn, and I always, in my thinking with Marilyn all the time was, anything you do, there's a reason for it. And anything Marilyn did, there's a reason for it. And I also understood that she didn't like to be rejected. I don't think anybody likes to be rejected.
When you sum it up, how would you describe the best part of being with Marilyn?
Well, it's been a sad day for me today, and I have always thought of, even though I haven't seen Marilyn for quite a while, I always think of, when I think of Marilyn, of the good times we had together. And she was great fun. I remember the first time I took a water ski, and I put a life preserver on her, and I must say it's quite a sight.
Why did you put a life preserver on her?
Well, because she doesn't like water and she doesn't swim. So, you know, we put this big life preserver on, and orange ones with a lot of cork in it. And I don't have any pictures, I'm sorry to say, but it was quite a sight because we couldn't get her out of the water or on her skis. You know, she kept dragging along the water.
Did she ever get up on the water skis?
No, she didn't, but she was a great sport about it. And she had she felt so free and loose and happy that she'd tell jokes and she was funny. It was a marvelous day.
Thank you very much, Mr. Grove.
When you become really famous in this country, you are written about by Pete Martin. You might call him the Boswell of the stars. And Pete Martin wrote a series of articles and a book about Marilyn Monroe. A venture not without its problems.
It wasn't easy. In fact, it took two interviews with Marilyn before I finished interviewing her, and I must have interviewed at least 10 other people about her to boot. I went to see her. She was living in New York on Sutton Place. At that point, she was engaged in an enterprise in which Milton Green, a photographer, was president of Marilyn Monroe Enterprises. She was attending the Strasbourg School of Dramatic Arts at the time. But even then, she was a creature obsessed by fear. I didn't know it, and it annoys you when she doesn't show up, when she's late. It took her an hour and a half to walk from her bedroom into the living room where I was waiting. And by the time she got there, I was so fed up with the whole deal, I said, well, I'm afraid you're too busy, and I'll take the next train back to Philadelphia. I got back to Philadelphia, and I realized I might be missing a very good interview because of pride, because my feelings were hurt, and I made another date, went back to New York to see her again. But the next time, I was very philosophical about the whole thing, and I waited this time only an hour for her to walk through the room. When she came through, she couldn't have been more cooperative once she got going. I'd never got a really good look at her because she's one of the few people who wouldn't let me use a tape recording machine, result of which I was busy writing all the time, and I haven't done so much writing in years. I had writer's cramp when I got through. I wrote all the answers to all my questions, and it took an hour and a half to 2 hours. When I got through, I thought my wrists were going to fall off, and I had only the vaguest idea of what Marilyn looked like. I thought of sort of a white figure in the corner in a terry cloth robe with white hair and a white face and white skin, almost an albino. But I must say that she gave, and she's very good as an interview because in her own cookie way, she says things that nobody else could possibly say, and nobody could make up for her to say. Or she did, rather, poor thing.
And Pete Martin traced Marilyn's career from its beginning.
I think she was born afraid, and she never got over it. In the end, fear killed her. For her first year in high school, she walked in a way the other girls instinctively mistrusted, and even then the boys whistled at her. She tried marriage 3 times, and none of the 3 worked. There were a series of miscarriages and divorces. And somewhere along the way, she became the greatest sex symbol of her time, as great as Rita Hayworth was before her, and as great as Brigitte Bardot was to be when Marilyn Monroe's waistline thickened. She tried her best to live up to the public's image of her, but she hated it, I think. She was afraid of that, just as she was afraid of showing up for interviews on time or reporting to a sound set when she was supposed to show up. Mm-hmm. But once she put in an appearance, she tried her very best. Nevertheless, opening that door and walking through it was the thing that made her throw up. And I was told she threw up 3 times while I was waiting to interview her the first time. That made the pit of her stomach feel like lead. That gave her the shakes. I've talked to 3 psychiatrists about the girl, and I don't mean right now since she's died, but after I interviewed her, and all 3 of them agreed that she was really frigid, but that she was trapped in the biggest one-woman striptease act of her time. By that, I mean she peeled both her body and her soul. In the end, she licked the compulsive eating and weight problem, which was giving her a thick middle. A maid at the Beverly Hills Hotels once told me about her. She's just a little scared kitten. She makes me want to take care of her. And that's the way most of the interviewers who interviewed her felt. I know when I first had anything to do with her, she annoyed me. I thought she was a spoiled, inconsiderate child. Young girl, a woman, whatever you want to call it. But in the end, inevitably, you wanted to protect her and take care of her. And in the end, she took care of her fear herself, and finally and permanently, I'm afraid. What made her tick? What made her the way she was? Well, she gave me an interview in depth before the ticking stopped. But before that, she got the nerve to walk through the last door of them all herself.
Pete Martin's views on Marilyn Monroe. Miss Monroe was not always dumb, but she achieved a reputation for Monroeisms, a sort of malapropism. She turned aside a newsman's questions very neatly once when the prying reporter tried to show her up. He asked her during discussion of the role of Grushenka in The Brothers Karamazov, "How do you spell Grushenka?" thinking she was too stupid to know. And she, with a superior smile and a twinkle in her eye, said, "You can look it up in the book." But she could be terribly naive about her sex appeal, or at least seem naive, after a daring picture of her body, mostly dressed, at a parade, had made quite a sensation and raised objections. She said, I'd noticed people looking at me all day, but I thought they were looking at my Grand Marshal's badge. On another occasion, when questioned about marriage and separate bedrooms, she said she felt a married couple should share the same bedroom. With a separate bedroom deal, she said, if you happen to think of something you want to say to the other one, it means you have to go traipsing down the hall, and you may be tired. For that matter, you may forget what you started out to say. Well, then came the line which seems prophetic now. Besides, separate bedrooms are lonely. I think people need human warmth, even when they're asleep and unconscious. To see Marilyn Monroe was to remember having seen her, and NBC's Ray Shearer is able to recall vividly a recent, unique occasion that has left him with such a memory.
The last time I saw Marilyn Monroe, she was wonderful. It was late on a Saturday night, the place Madison Square Garden. Occasion, the big birthday salute to President Kennedy. I was in a kind of a press box in the bleachers. The president was down below on the floor, sitting in front of a platform. All evening long, they performed for him Jack Benny, Ella Fitzgerald, Henry Fonda, Maria Callas, Peggy Lee, Jimmy Durante, Harry Belafonte, the greats of show business. Then came the big moment of the evening. Out came Marilyn Monroe in a skin-tight pink dress, so tight she could hardly move to the microphone. She had been late, as usual. She was pushing a huge birthday cake. The lights went down, a big spotlight lit up Marilyn Monroe all alone on the stage. She was introduced by the president's brother-in-law, Peter Lawford.
Mr. President, at this time I have the honor to present to you a woman of many parts, all of them beautiful. A great actress, delightful comedian, a woman who wears her mantle of fame graciously, a woman who possesses such character that she will even admit one small fault. She has been known to be late. However, Mr. President, on this occasion of your birthday, this lovely lady is not only punctilious but punctual. Mr. President, Marilyn Monroe.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, Mr. President. Happy birthday to you.
It was a wonderful moment. A few minutes later, when President Kennedy went up to the same microphone, he told the 20,000 in Madison Square Garden, after having happy birthday sung to me in such a sweet voice, I can now retire from politics. Afterwards, there was a reception at the house of Arthur Krim in New York. Just as the president was leaving the reception, he was introduced to Marilyn Monroe. As she told it in Life magazine last week, I was with my former father-in-law, Isidore Miller. So I think I did something wrong when I met the president. Instead of saying, how do you do, I just said, this is my former father-in-law, Isidore Miller. Still quoting Miss Monroe, he came here as an immigrant, and I thought this would be one of the biggest things in his life. He's about 75 or 80 years old. Well, that was the last time President Kennedy saw Marilyn Monroe. Their brief meeting seemed to mean as much to him as it did to her. Ray Shearer, NBC News at the White House.
Like many famous stars, Marilyn Monroe's health was uncertain and often the subject of news stories. For the past year, she's been under the care of a psychiatrist. Why is it that what we call success often goes hand in hand with emotional disturbances? Marilyn Monroe, of course, was known throughout the world as a sex symbol. Do you think this was a source of satisfaction for her, or perhaps contrary?
Well, this is part, of course, of the reason why she was famous. Now, sex, of course, is one of the factors present in human beings, but it is by no means the total of any human being. And for a woman, this can be a very distressing thing. If she is not clearly aware and confident of her abilities as a total human being, to be considered a sex symbol is sometimes to be considered not quite a total human being, and this can be very distressing. It can affect her relationships with women, with a feeling that women are antagonistic or at least cautious with her, for fear she will steal their men And it can be difficult with men because the individual may feel that they are only liked because they are sexual. And this, of course, is so incomplete.
Thank you, Dr. Wilbur. One cannot help but pause at this moment to glance away from the scene of tragedy and ask what, after all, was her true worth as an artist. I think the answer is that she was worth a great deal more than is suggested by the image she created for herself in the early days, that nude calendar image, or that wiggly image, or that multiple husband image, or later that image of tardiness and irresponsibility. On the other hand, she did not rise to the stature of being one of the greats of the acting world. There was too much insecurity for this. Ben Lyon of 20th Century Fox said of her she had a terrific inferiority complex. She loved films. She lived for her career, and yet she was scared to death every time she walked on a set. The American public was in part responsible for this. It raises stars to a high place in popularity and in earnings, regardless of whether they have a sure footing in professional skill and in personal character. This girl had no sure footing. Nature gave her beauty, but society threw her into the goat pen, so to speak. When she rose too fast, like an unsteady rocket.
Well, the thing I like the most is to become a real actress. And I remember when I was a kid, sitting in the front row at the movies on Saturday afternoon, and I would never come out of the movie. They'd have to come and get me, you know, I'd sit in the front row. And I'd think how wonderful it would be to be an actress and so forth. But I didn't really realize about acting, except I appreciated what I saw. Bad, good, it didn't matter. I enjoyed it very much, everything that I would see. It's anything that would move on the screen.
This was an NBC Radio Network production produced by the NBC News and Program Departments. Your host was Leon Pearson, NBC News. This is the NBC Radio Network.